You're listening to a classic business podcast as heard on Classic 1027. 1027. This is Classic Business.
It's time for your view from the C-suite here on Classic Business, bringing you closer to South Africa's business leaders and what makes them tick, keeps them up at night and keeps them going, particularly in such a brutal environment. My next guest is regularly described as one of the country's most inspiring women in tech. She was nominated for the IT Personality of the Year in 2017. She's been listed as one of the most influential South Africans in tech. Karen Nadesan, CEO of PayU, which, as we know, is a Prosus subsidiary. Welcome to The View, Karen.
Hi, Michael.
Now, you've got a really large share of the market in South Africa when it comes to online payments. I think somewhere around 40%. You've got over 1,500 of South Africa's top merchants. And globally, you've got presence in 16 high-growth markets, including India. So a massive global operation, this. And so it's fair to say you've got a global overview of what's going on in the payment space. Firstly, just share with us a little bit of your journey to head up this online payments giant that is a subsidiary of Prosus.
Yeah, sure. So I have been in the technology sector for a very, very long time, over 20 years. I started off as a young teenager. I was quite lucky. My dad got me a computer and I was puttering around. And I was quite fortunate because my school offered computer science. So, I studied it. I learned programming from a young age. I continued through to university, where I had a computer science degree, and I started working in the tech field quite early. I earned my degree at about 20, and my first job was in Cape Town. So I then I got a great job at Microsoft in the UK. Still very early on in my career, and I had access to a lot of very influential people. For Microsoft, I moved to BP, where Dana DC was the CIO at the time. He's now the CIO of the Pentagon, and Jackie Wright from Microsoft, who's now the VP of Microsoft. So I think, you know, I've had a really interesting career abroad and access in terms of what women can actually do in the industry, especially from a technology perspective. I came back to Cape Town about 8 years ago, and I started working at PayU. I always wanted to come back home, and Cape Town is home. And I started off as a product manager, as I said, and from there I just worked really, really hard. And about 4 years ago, I had my first baby, and on maternity leave there was an opportunity to take the role of CEO. I thought about it quite hard, and I finally took it. And it's been quite a challenging road. I would say the first 2 years was extremely challenging. It's a challenging market, but we've able to turn things around. We've grown considerably. And so now I think, you know, I'm a financial technology specialist and I absolutely love it.
An amazing journey. Could you just describe a typical day in your job?
Oh, goodness. Well, there's a lot to cover. So I'm generally up really early, about 4:30, 5 o'clock. I have two little kids, so this is really the only time that I get to myself. I spend the morning in some meditation. And then from there, I start having really early meetings with my sales team. I'm very lucky because they're up quite early in the morning, where we start to organize the day, and any important meetings happen in the morning. And now during COVID, we get to stay at home. But generally, I find myself sitting in Cape Town traffic, getting into town in the morning. So that first hour, I use that to actually have conversations with my team and to set up the day.
Yeah, it's a global team. So, I mean, you've got teams in different time zones and that kind of thing. So difficult to align that.
Yeah, so the most part of the day, the first half of the day, is really with the local teams. So, and we have quite a few of the functional heads that are in the same or similar time zone in Europe. We have quite a few merchants that are in other time zones, Latin America, the United States, that we speak to in the evening. So we'll generally have meetings with them about 6 p.m. We try to do a cutoff as well so that we have some family time. Otherwise, you know, work and family, everything starts to merge and it can become quite a stressful environment. So, you know, we've had to be very, very conscious of the fact that we're working in several time zones, and how could we do it in an efficient way that also, you know, helps people. So, yeah, these are some of the considerations, but comes with the territory. Almost every technology job these days, you know, I think is global. This is the way the world is moving, and you have to adapt to that.
But it's interesting hearing you talk about finding that right balance, Karen, because what I've found is specifically now in this work from home environment, it's very difficult to draw the line between work and your personal time and your free time. And as a mom who's the CEO of a global payments company, that must be even more difficult for you to try and separate the two. And interesting to hear that you do that consciously. I think so many people need to do that, or we run the risk of burnout. Now, if you look back in your career, mentors very often play very instrumental roles in young professionals' careers. Did you have a mentor? Were you ever taken under anyone's wing? And if so, what was the one bit of golden advice that they gave to you?
Okay. So I have, you know, I think as a woman, always been in the minority when it comes to technology. So generally, you would look for someone that is quite similar to you, that you could grow into, you know, fill their shoes. And that wasn't readily available to me. So it was really just later on in my career, and I would say most likely around BP, where I had so much exposure to women in technology, and I was able to see that the field is much larger than I actually initially thought. From there, I would say someone that was really inspirational was Jackie Wright. I'm still actually in contact with her, and just seeing her lead was really inspirational. I didn't have any very specific mentors. And most of them, I would say, are people that I could reach out to from time to time. Another one was my manager at the time, Adam Henning, and he really helped me get into, you know, fast-track leadership programs and that sort of thing. So no specific mentors, but definitely a lot of people. Another one will be Melinda Gates that I look up to. Yeah. That give me inspiration of, you know, how, you know, what can be done in the technology field.
Well, I think what you have highlighted, though, is a potential challenge that the industry faces. And there's a rising generation of women in tech, but still far too few women in tech. Would you say that is one of the key challenges, is that some of those networks are quite thin? And what else do you see as potential barriers for women making it in tech?
100%. So if we look at just the developer community in South Africa, it's the figures are quite shocking. There's about 18%. It's so low, you know, of women who are developers in this country. So there's a lot of work to be done. If we look at the unemployment stats, you know, we know that it's quoted around 27%. But if you go down into the detail, it's actually 58% of women that are unemployed. And, you know, we have a lot of challenges here. So women take on a lot of responsibility. And I know this in my own life because it has been quite challenging. I've been quite fortunate because, you know, I can afford these days to have help. And the only way I was really able to move my career forward was to make, you know, very difficult decisions in terms of how am I going? I need to help myself. And that came in terms of, okay, my mom is going to help me. I'm going to have a nanny. You know, I'm going to have someone to clean the house. I have to have conversations with my husband to say, well, you know, can you help with X, Y, and Z? If you don't do that, and very consciously, you find yourself having to take on all the responsibility or almost all the responsibility or an equal share of responsibility at home and having to work. And that's actually what keeps many, many women behind. You'll find that earlier on in their career, they will move forward and they'll kind of hit a brick wall and then take a couple of years out because it's not possible to manage everything and to have a career. These are really real challenges that we sit with. And I think really the only thing that we could do there is to look at the future and you know, the family and that entire structure quite differently to be able to move women forward.
Yeah, it is something that's getting a whole lot more attention now, at least as well. Sheryl Sandberg is another one who's doing a phenomenal job in the tech space in shining the light on these issues. Now, we're obviously operating at a very challenging time, but a very interesting time for e-commerce and online businesses. Obviously, COVID-19 has forced a lot of retail online globally. We finally caught up following the backtrack by government on e-commerce. What impact are you seeing COVID-19 firstly having in the short term in the payment space, and then what impact do you see it having over the longer term?
So yeah, I mean, COVID-19 has really been devastating on every single economy. And the one really great thing I think that has come out of this is the shift in focus that I've seen from huge global businesses to more local businesses. So we've seen an incredible amount of small businesses that have come online, and also the informal trading business, which, as you would know, is a very, very difficult market. And one of the goals that we have at KU and is around financial inclusion. So there's a lot of partnerships that we have to enable this. Ozo, MobiCred, for instance, it's credit facilities that they drive. Companies like Lululemon, Thumbs Up, Yoka, Ikoka, that have point of sales devices for SMB businesses. So I think it's a great opportunity to drive financial inclusion and for smaller businesses to be included into this digital economy.
And in terms of innovation, you've recently done some very interesting things in India. Can you just tell me where you see financial inclusion heading thanks to online? I know it offers things. I was chatting to the CEO of Vodacom, Shamil Jusad, the other day about their nano loan offerings that they're now able to do as a telco with the data that they have on many of their customers to offer them nano loans over very short periods of time. So they're now merging into the kind of the financial services space. There's a lot of blurring of the lines here. It's very exciting.
Yeah. So I think India's quite unique because they have this UPI system, which gives you a unique identification. And one of the biggest things in terms of financial inclusion, especially with the lower tiers of the economy, is being able to have an identity. Once you have an identity, you're able to then be included in this whole economy because you can actually transact online. So much of the innovation and technology is actually driven by that ability to identify yourself. In terms of microfinancing, this is something that is absolutely key to the lower segments of the market because they don't really have ready access to funding. And many people live hand to mouth. They don't have, a month's salary that's going to be able to take you through the entire month. So things like microfinancing are really, really important. In fact, there's actually a pretty good platform in South Africa geared towards women called Spoon Money. And it's a group micro lending platform that is geared towards women in the informal trading segment, where it would help by giving you a bit of finance to get you through to buy goods to be able to sell online. So this is especially in countries like India and Africa, these types of innovation and technology really, really drive growth in terms of that lower segment of the market.
And then just talk to me about the shareholder support that you get from Prosus and at board level from the likes of Bob van Dijk and others. The story of Naspers and Prosus has really been a great South African success story. What's it like to operate within the group?
So Bob van Dijk and our CEO, Laurent de Mol, have been absolutely visionary in terms of the way that they lead. They're really, really structured, very goal-oriented people. And also things like diversity and inclusion are really, really important to them, which I suppose drives my motivation for working for a company like that. It's not really just about, how do you drive revenue, but it's also about how do we drive things like financial inclusion and look at how can we enable people to become more part of the digital economy in emerging markets. And emerging markets are markets that we specialize in. So from a PayU perspective, there is an agenda that is driven by them, but I have quite a bit of autonomy in South Africa in terms of the strategy and what we do here.
Corin, it's been absolutely fascinating chatting to you and sharing a little bit more of your journey and your insights into the world of online payments. No doubt COVID-19 is going to continue accelerating this broad trend that we've been seeing building up before the pandemic. And I'm sure you're going to continue blazing that trail for women in tech in South Africa in particular. Thanks for your time.
This is Classic Business.
Thanks to producer Andres Mthlangu and sound engineer Matabataba Rodebe for putting another great week's worth of content together, guys. You do the job week in, week out, so thanks so much. Up next, the Jazz Lounge with Rod Miller in Cape Town, and in Gauteng, The Full Works with Richard Koch till 9. Remember to maintain your social distancing over the weekend, keep washing those hands, and protect yourself and your family and your community. Goodbye.